listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview with one of my favorite musicians and people on the planet, Mr. Jeff Coffin. How are you, Jeff?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. You know, I want to kind of like start this interview with the first time that I ever saw you play. It was 1999 or 1998, and I actually live right by there now. You and Victor Wooten, Future Man, and Bella Fleck were playing the Wiltern. Do you remember playing the Wiltern Theater about 20-plus years ago by chance?
I remember the Wiltern.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, I was a music student at USC Thornton School of Music. I had been a huge fan of Bella Fleck and the Flecktones. Live Art was one of my favorite records. And I remember walking into the Wiltern, and I'd never seen you guys play live. And first of all, you look like a wizard that came out of like Lord of the Rings. And then I heard you play, and it was just like one of the most incredible experiences to hear all of you play, to hear you solo. And I just remember it being, you guys played two sets, and I just remember it being like this unbelievably, incredibly humbling and inspiring experience. So
no, it's very kind.
Thank you. Yeah, I have to thank you for that because, you know, I'm sure you know, being a music student in a school of music, you just get kind of burned out with music that you have to learn. And then when you hear people that are joyfully playing for the love of it, it is what it is all about. And you guys kind of like rekindled that fire that I had for music again.
Oh, and, thank you.
And you were doing it all live together, like in the flesh. It was just like such a powerful experience. And, you know, I want to first ask you, what was the moment of zen for you to pick up the saxophone? How old were you? What was the song or what was the experience like that made you want to be a musician?
I wanted to play drums originally.
What? I didn't know.
Yeah, I wanted to be a drummer. I've always been attracted to rhythm. And, you know, I think that even the way, I mean, the way I play is very rhythmic. It's just the way that I hear, you know. And so, you know, I was in a little town in Maine, and
what town? Was it Portland, or was it even smaller than that?
No, oh, Portland was the major city. No, it's a little town called Dexter. It was about 3,000 people, right in the 45th parallel. You know,
wow,
like, right between, you know, it's like exactly halfway between the equator and the North Pole is the 45th parallel. And so, you know, I was like, oh, you know, I want to play drums. I'm sure my folks are behind me like, no, it's not that. And so my director, this guy, Arthur Legassi, he said, well, what about saxophone? We need some sax players. I was like, yeah, okay, whatever, you know. And so it just kind of stuck.
And how old are you? You must have been like 12, 11, something like that?
Something like that, yeah, like either fourth or fifth grade.
Wow.
And you know, and there was a lot of saxophone on the radio back then, also in pop tunes and different things. So, you know, I remember hearing a lot of that. And so that was some of the first stuff I heard. So that was kind of influencing, you know, my tone and sort of how I was conceptualizing things. And, I remember that he was great, and there was a trombone player named Howard Cohen. I have no idea whatever happened to him, but we went to grade school together and up through junior high. And Howie and I used to stand up when we played. And I would stand next to him for whatever reason, right? And I mean, I had parts, but I would never really play them. I would just play whatever melody parts I was hearing going on in the ensemble. So I've always been really attracted to melody. And I started playing my director's combo the summer after my seventh grade year, he had a little trio that would go out and play professionally. And so I was making money and bought my first horn, bought a King Super 20 by myself. Spent like $700 in like the late 70s.
That's right.
That I had earned through gigs, you know.
Hold on, Jeff. We're having a little bit of static. Sam has just asked if you can just disconnect and reconnect because there's static when you're talking. So just do
it. Yeah, let me try from.
All right. Can you hear me
better?
Oh, way better. Okay. Great. All right. So keep telling that story because we're good.
All right. Yeah. So let me just make sure that I can hear myself here. Give me 1 second. I'm going to unmute myself. There we go. You guys need a little more level? Are you okay?
No, that's good. That's perfect.
Great. So you know, the summer after my seventh grade year, like I said, you know, I started playing professionally with my director, this guy Arthur Legassi, and
were you doing like Charlie Parker tunes? Were you doing like
no, we were playing like dances and weddings.
Wow.
You know, playing things like Apple Blossom Time and Winchester Cathedral and like all these like we were playing like Elks Lodges.
Wow.
Like they were casuals, you know, but it was like old people, you know, dancing and like drinking a lot and, you know, doing weddings and the gigs were paying, you know, like $35-$40 a person. And then every now and then we get one that would pay 50, but this was like the late 70s.
Right.
You know, so this was like, I don't know, 70, 78, 79 ish, maybe 80, right around that area.
And you're like what, 12 years old gigging as a professional musician? This is crazy.
Yeah. So I was doing that. And so I was making money, you know, and then we moved down to New Hampshire right before I went into high school. And, I didn't have any gigs, of course. And so kind of had to start the whole thing over again. But I had a great teacher in New Hampshire named Doug Patch. And I started going to music camp at the University of New Hampshire, which was awesome. And met some really, really great friends that, you know, to this day are still some of my best buddies.
So did you get into jazz in high school or like before that?
Yeah, I was. I kind of started. Not to change the subject, but I'm looking up at my light. I've got a light above my computer, and there are these two spiders that are crawling up.
Let's play some bets.
Yeah. See that now. This is when like I wish that like I still got stoned because that would be amazing. I'd just be like zoning out.
Hold on, man. I just need to watch these spiders. Let me put some Pink Floyd on and watch some spiders.
Man, let me show you these spiders, dude. So you know, I started going to music camp and I found my tribe, man. I remember very specifically the first time I went, it was a 2-week camp and everybody was saying goodbye to each other at the end. Now, this is way before cell phones or internet or email or anything. And so, you know, everybody was getting each other's address and, you know, phone numbers and all that. And everybody was hugging and people were crying. Like, it was just this beautiful experience. And I just thought, wow, man, these are my people.
Wow.
You know, and it was the pivotal moment for me. And I mean, you know, even now, like what, I don't know, you know, 10 years later.
Nice.
Snuck that right in, you know. No, all this time later, man, I get goosebumps thinking about that moment. And, you know, I teach at Vanderbilt University. The classes start tomorrow. So I've been on with my students, like trying to figure out schedules and, you know, when we can meet because I'm going back on the road on Sunday. It's insanity, you know.
In like 2 weeks at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. I'm like, oh, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, so, you know, they are part of my tribe also. And I make sure they know that. I'm like, man, you know, we're all in the same tribe here. Like, I'm just a bit older than you, like a lot older than you are. but, you know, I want them to feel welcome. That's the whole thing is that I want them to feel like whatever knowledge we can impart, as a faculty, that we want to do that. You know, we just ask that they meet us part way.
I love that about you because, you know, like, you know, I toured so much and I realized also that it is so much, it's so important to give back. So that's what made me want to teach as well. And it's like, it's weird that you think that you just performing will be just it. And it's not. It's like you need this balance because you know you had great teachers that inspired you. And it's like that's probably what you want to give back to the community and to your tribe because that's the only way it kind of rejuvenates itself and replenishes itself, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, teaching and going out and doing the workshop stuff that I do around the country with different schools and that kind of thing is, I mean, I think that's probably the most important thing that I do. And, you know, and that's not to take anything away from what I do live, because that's very important also. But to get in one-on-one and to be able to sit with a young player to really start to carve out something, to give them the tools to understand improvisation, to understand their own creativity, their own creative freedom, to encourage that, to inspire that, be inspired by that. All these things are really important.
Right.
And you know, a lot of times they don't know that they already have permission. They think they need permission. And one of my jobs is to remind them or to tell them that they don't need permission to express themselves, that they have it. And they have it so much that they can give it to other people by the way that they express themselves.
I'm getting chills, man. That's
well, you know, it's a beautiful experience, man. And I highly, highly recommend teaching to anybody. And, you know, not everybody loves it, and that's fine. It's not for everybody, but it's an important part of our development and our process to share this information and to figure out if someone says, well, okay, well, there's a C7 chord. What do I do? And you can't just go, well, here are the notes. Just play something. You know, right. I developed an app last year. Well, I put out an app last year called Connecting the Dots, which is taking one chord and then two chords, then blues, and teaching people about the arpeggiations and voice leading at the same time, how one note leads into the next note or leads into the next chord in the next closest proximity, either up or down. And it's all call and response. So it's like, I want to teach these students how to drive the car down the middle of the road first.
Right.
Because they're all talking about chord scale relationships. And I'm like, well, okay, let's play this blues in the key of E. You know, and usually they can't really play in that key. It's an unfamiliar key. So getting a foundation in whatever it is. I mean, we're talking about music primarily, but whatever it is, getting a foundation. You know, go to New York or LA and you look up and those skyscrapers are built on a foundation.
Absolutely.
So as an architect, you have to know how to build a foundation. You have to have a deep, profound understanding of foundation. And so for us as musicians, we have to have a deep, profound understanding of foundation so that we can build our skyscraper. You dig?
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So we can be Frank Gehry if we want to be, you know, it can be like some crazy, you know, out there stuff, or it, you know, it can be just boom, 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 whatever you want.
I think Frank Lloyd Wright once said, architecture is frozen music. And I always think of that because it's like, every time you're building either a song or a solo or something, it's like you're creating this structure that exactly what you said. It's built, has to be built on a foundation. I know everybody that listens to you, including your students, thinks this. I've never heard you play a bad note, a wrong note.
Oh.
So when you're soloing, and this is me just asking because, you know, I love improvising and I love taking solos. When you're soloing, are you digging, looking for phrases that move you? Are you wanting to, you know, showcase a new kind of like combination of licks or rhythms that you're kind of like circulating in your imagination or brain or even just your soul and feel? Like, what is your concept when you're soloing? I've always wanted to ask you this, and I don't think I ever have. So here I am. What is your concept when you're building a solo?
I'm just trying not to suck.
Sometimes I hear you play, and I'm like, man, this guy is just so burning. And you know what? I've never thanked – I mean, I've thanked you via text, but, you know I lost both of my saxophonists. And I lost one of my best friends. And on the day that I found out, I went to see Dave Matthews. It was like I was in, you know, en route to see Dave Matthews' band at in San Diego when I got the news. And I remember texting you, and I'm like, man, I just lost one of my best friends. Play one for him tonight. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's like I've never been able to just kind of like thank you for what you do create, because there are moments where it's like, I mean, I was literally grieving, like just listening. Mm-hmm. Like, you took me to a place of just total music healing. And
oh, thank you.
I know you do that for a lot of people, but I mean, I know for myself, I've asked you several times because you are like a channel, you know, a conduit for that music therapy just from what you play. So that's why I also wanted to ask, because, you know, when you are building solos, you create moments. I mean, there's so many moments rhythmically, mm-hmm. musically, phrasing wise that you're always building something beautiful. And it's like, it's really tasteful and it's masterful. And I kind of had this same conversation with Victor Wooten, who was a guest a couple weeks ago. And, you know, he's you and he, it makes sense that you guys play in a band together, because you have this musical philosophy that a lot of people in the music industry just don't always kind of get to, which is just trying to make something as simple and beautiful that resonates within yourself. And if it resonates with you, it'll resonate with somebody else. So like when you're playing, you're not thinking at all. You're not thinking about hitting a note. Are you like listening to what somebody else played or maybe what somebody else sang, or, you know, are you kind of taking it all in? Like, you have to have these moments where you're taking everything in and expressing. Tell me a little bit about that process.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for those kind words, man. I appreciate it. And, we are trying to create moments. I think of them as holy moments, quite honestly, you know, and I don't mean that in like a pseudo religious way or anything. I'm just like, these are moments that are, you know, kind of reverential in so many different ways for me. You know, to be a musician, I mean, first of all, man, like to be a musician, you know, being selfish is part of that. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just saying that to achieve a level of proficiency, we have to have a lot of alone time to become, to again, build that foundation on the instrument, to really get to know it. And we have to play with other people. But yeah, listening is the most important part of all of it. I think in general, like just in life, but specifically music. So when I'm playing, whether it's with my group or with Matthews or if I'm in the studio or whatever, man, my listening ears are wide open. And so I'm trying to have a dialogue. I'm trying to have a conversation. I'm trying to create or help create a moment that, you know, people will feel moved, that I will feel moved, that we're moving together, not only emotionally, but spiritually, rhythmically, melodically, harmonically. And, you know, our fans are really great listeners. And I give people a lot of credit for being able to listen at a very high level. And so when you're around musicians that do that also, the opportunity for magic is there. And there are nights when everyone is undulating together and just breathing together as one unit. And those are the nights that really stand out. And they're rare. They're very, very rare.
Well, it's like Nirvana on some level. It's like everybody's in sync with each other, right?
Yeah. I mean, call it what you will. It's just, it's a moment that we are just absolutely connected. And you know, there are those moments anyways through all the gigs, but I'm talking about like a whole night. When that happens, you know, that's super unusual. That's super unusual. It's sort of like we're sort of sitting in our own unconscious. My dad used to talk about that. Like, you know, like when you're walking away from the basketball hoop and you go whoosh, and it just nothing but net,
yes.
You know,
yes.
or like you can't miss anything when you're at the plate, or the like Nolan Ryan is like just everything is just, it's on, you know? And my dad would just say, wow, you're just unconscious.
Well, and you know, it's what I find too, it's about what you're hearing back. You know, it's like sometimes you could be playing with the same band and even the same venue, but everything's going to sound maybe a little bit differently.
Yeah.
How hard people are hitting or what the arrangements are calling for, or even just like how the room feels with the amount of people or if it's open or if it's not. So all those elements sometimes add to it. And there's sometimes these moments like where everybody and everything, I always say it's like all the elements are lining up, you know, to create those moments, because you know that there's something that's just kind of like around all of it, kind of balancing everything. So nothing is too much. It just feels like you can do it forever, you know? And, you know, like you said, athletes talk about it too. It's like when they just know that they just feel it, it's always going to work because there's total connection either with their team or, you know, with themselves. So it's interesting that you say that you, you know, a lot of people may not know that you guys may not have those moments some nights. And, you know, you'll fool everybody because we all think that you are. But it's just the desire that you seek for that I think creates those magic moments. You know what I mean? I feel like all the elements have to, like, kind of arrive. And some of it is sense oriented. So I'm sure you guys are all listening and hoping for those moments all the time. And sometimes, you know, as a group, I'm sure you feel this. Like sometimes, you know, there are moments where somebody has to like push a little harder or somebody has to kind of give a little bit. What I noticed when you and Rashawn are trading solos, it is like this beautiful, it's not even a competition at all, but it's like this beautiful, like strengthening of each other's craft by pushing each other with what you're playing. And I see you guys sometimes like, man, that was a killer solo. That was like, you guys give the nods. And I just wanted to showcase a little moment that you have with Dave Matthews on Seek Up where you guys are trading solos a little bit. Let's play this YouTube clip of you playing with Rashawn with Dave Matthews.
Okay, sure.
Thank you. Sometimes I feel like I'm falling.
That was awesome. That was awesome. That was, I love all the comments. We're just going back and forth, man. First of all, burning solos. You guys are just playing off each other. The rhythm section sounds unbelievable. I was actually just thinking about that. I'm like, man, Coffin plays with two of the greatest rhythm sections, three of the greatest rhythm sections with Keith Carlock too.
Mm.
Just, you are spoiled with the best of the best is as far
I
as
am.
Rhythm sections. So it's got to be fun over that. But
well, it is, man. You know, like when you have people like that, you know, that, you know, Vic and Future Man and Bela, and with Dave, we have Carter and Stefan and Buddy and Tim, and Dave's playing some rhythmic guitar. I mean, when you have that, again, foundation, I guess I would say, you know, it's hard to do anything wrong, quite honestly.
Right.
You know, because they're so supportive and the time is so solid. You know, we can kind of go anywhere. And you know, obviously, you know, Rashawn and I are cutting up a lot when we play.
But that's also that makes it raw. You know, it sounds like Miles Davis and Kenny Garrett. You know, I know you know those live shows.
Mm-hmm.
When just like, you know, where Miles like, he does this shit every night. You know what I mean? It's
right.
Like, that's what it sounds like. You two are masters of the craft and playing off each other like that. And it just, you hear it in your phrasing. You hear it in what you're playing. You hear it in the chords that you guys are kind of like
–
even like playing off each other. It's just,
it's
awesome. It's just awesome. It's just,
Well, you know, I have to give kudos to Rashawn too. I mean, he's obviously a brilliant musician and a very, very dear friend. And, you know, getting to play with him every night is really a treat, you know, and that, you know, that doesn't do it justice, of course, but, it's an amazing experience to get to play with somebody. It's been 14 years now. And to play with someone night after night like that for 14 years in that kind of setting, you know, we are one unit, you know, and, you know, the idea still is to try to surprise each other.
Right.
And to try to come up with things that are still unique to play off one another. You know, he'll bring in a new trumpet or even a new mouthpiece or a lead pipe or whatever. And I can hear the difference. I'll be like, oh, well, that's, you know, that cup is a little more shallow, or it's a little deeper, or like it's a little quicker, it's slotting better here, or this or that. And he's like, yep. And it's the same with me, you know, because we know each other's sound so well, the articulation, all these different things, you know, and we talk about it. It's not like it goes unnoticed. We talk about that stuff. And, because we want it to be at the very highest level, all the time. And one of the things I'll say too about this band is that it's very consistent. You know, the level of playing is really high all the time.
And the arrangements, everything, all of it.
Yeah. And everybody's on it. You know, we don't rehearse that much. And like these two gigs that we just did in West Palm Beach, we didn't rehearse at all. We had been off for what, three or four weeks?
Right.
You know, and we just went in and, you know, and hit it. And I remember like it was up at maybe like the third or fourth tune when it felt like that shift, like when we all kind of like the gears loosened up, you know? And it was like even those first few tunes, like nobody would know that unless I told them.
Right.
You know? But it's like the way that it kind of goes into itself, I guess you might say. And it's thrilling, you know, it's thrilling. And so this band is incredibly consistent, you know, from the bottom all the way up. And I think everybody's really inspired to be practicing and really working on their craft. And I appreciate that. You know, I couldn't play with a band that wasn't doing that.
Well, you know, it's funny. I remember talking about this with John Mayer when we did a show a while ago. And he was just doing the trio stuff. And, you know, we were talking about being in a band. He said the best part about being in a band is you're working on your stuff by yourself. And when you come to play together, you can't wait to show all the things you've been working on with the band. And everybody kind of feeds off that because everybody's been working on their own path, you know, as a musician. And then come together, it's like so exciting because you're like, oh man, either it's a song you wrote or it's a lick or it's a vibe or something you're listening to.
Right.
Speaking of something that I've always wanted to ask you, I don't think I've ever asked you, who were like, just rattle off some of your biggest influences as players. I know Coltrane, I know Charlie Parker, but who else? Give me some other names.
Well, those names dwarf when I say Bela Fleck, Victor Wooten, Future Man, Rashawn, Dave, Tim.
That's awesome.
Stefan, Carter, Boyd, Buddy. You know, I mean, those are my influences.
That's awesome.
Quite honestly.
That's a great.
Know, but for saxophone, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of guys. But, you know, Roy is in there also, of course. I mean, I've listened to Roy, you know, as much as I've ever listened to anybody because I had to learn the catalog also.
Right.
You know, and, you know, Howard Levy is in there also because I had to learn the Flecktones catalog. And so
harmonica players, man, in the game, he's just
no question. No question. He's a genius. And, you know, so, you know, people like Coltrane, Joe Henderson, Wayne Shorter, Ornette Coleman, Charlie Parker, Cannonball Adderley, the list goes on and on and on. Dexter Gordon, Louis Armstrong, Miles. I mean, just, you know, improvisers of jazz, black American music,
right.
But also improvisers from other countries. You know, I was listening to some Hamza El Dean earlier tonight, who's a brilliant oud player out of Egypt. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of Tom Waits and, you know, Leonard Cohen and great songwriters. I love melody. And as we were talking about before. So, you know, the people that I've played with over the years, all the players in the Mutet, you know, people like Jeff Sipe, Kofi Burbridge, Felix Pastorius, Bill Fanning, Tom Giampietro. I mean, the list goes on and on. Keith Carlock, Victor Krauss, Jordan Pearlson, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, all these people that I've worked with, people that I've recorded with. I've got a new record that's about to come out. I have 8 drummers on it.
We're about to play a song. Let's play something right now. What do you want to play first?
Man, let's go esoteric on it. Let's do When Birds Sing.
All right.
So this is a tune. I don't know if you can see it. Let me grab this real quick.
Yeah, do it.
So this bungee chair, right? Like when you, I don't know if you can hear it. Let me put the microphone down. Hang on a second.
Right? So, that's crazy.
So you get the idea, right? So there's tone.
Right.
Now let me get this back up and running here. So there's tone on the bungee cords because, you know, it's like a piece of string basically, but it's,
right,
you know, more elastic than that. So this tune, when you hear it at the beginning, doom, 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 that started on the bungee chair. I wrote the tune from this chair the day I bought this chair from from the container store.
You should just hand that to Victor and be like, your next solo should be on this.
So I kind of improvised this clarinet melody, kind of morphed it around and you know, found something I really liked. Then I had Alana Rocklin, who's the bass player for Sound Tribe Sector 9. You know that band?
Yeah,
so Alana used to live here, and she's an amazing upright and electric player. Studied with Rodney Whitaker up in Michigan. And so I had her put some muted bass on it, on top of the bungee chair, right?
Awesome.
Because I just looped the chair. And then Michael League from Snarky Puppy plays Middle Eastern frame drums also. And I've already had him on 1 or 2 tunes on bass. And I said, man, I said, you want to play some frame drums on this tune? I sent it to him. He's like, oh, yeah, absolutely. So that's Michael playing frame drums. And then I said, I also want sort of a like a Middle Eastern singer, right? Kind of do some melismatic kind of stuff. And he said, there's this woman, Sarah Ariche, from Morocco. And, you know, here's her info. And I wasn't thinking I wanted a female vocal. I wanted a male vocal.
Right.
And so I had sent him sort of a like the male vocal you hear on that is me at the very beginning of this tune. And there's a couple of things where I sing a part with her. But I had thought I wanted a male vocalist, but she sent me back this stuff. I don't know if you've heard the track yet or not.
Let's play it.
But man, it's stunning what she did. She also plays an African Ngoni, which is a precursor to the banjo. And so there's kind of that harp-like sound that you'll hear. So it's her on those, me playing clarinet, and I think there's some bass clarinet in there also. But woodwinds, the bungee chair, Alana Rockland, Michael League on frame drums, and Sarah Ariche.
Here it is, When Birds Can Sing.
That's it.
Dude, that was so slamming. Dude,
thanks.
It sounded like almost reminiscent of Ali Farka Touré, like totally in that. Yeah. Band. It sounded like a kora, that instrument that you were talking about.
Sounds a lot like a kora, actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah. Beautiful. Because yeah, it's got that same kind of gourdish thing, you know, and it's plucked.
Right.
So yeah, it's very similar to a kora. It's not as big though, you know.
Right. I assume when you did your little air instrument version. You know, you and I were texting, man, your clarinet playing is incredible. Like,
oh, thank you.
And you know, it's what's so interesting is like you have such personality on each instrument. And I don't think I've ever heard you do clarinet like on a track like that before. I mean, usually do sax. So it's really amazing when you do. Why don't you ever bust out a clarinet solo with Dave Matthews Band?
Oh man, you wouldn't, it's so hard to mic it in that situation.
Because of the instrument, you know? Just because of the acoustics.
Both, you know, it's really challenging. Because I mic the horn from the side.
Right.
I don't know where it is. but like on soprano, I mic it from the body. So it gives that richer tone, you know.
You probably need it quieter too, just to be able to hear.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if we were doing an acoustic set somewhere, I could do that.
Oh man!
And but it'd be really difficult to do that live.
Well, you know what I love too? It's like, you know, I love that you're not just listening to one style of music. My favorite musicians are like that. They're listening to world music. They're listening to rock music. They're listening to blues, funk, jazz, everything.
And yeah, I listen to everything. I do. You know, and I mean, During the last 2 years, you know, I have six other records that are ready to go.
Unbelievable.
That are done, you know, and they're all really different. I mean, it's like one is more of a global thing. And in this tune, I was kind of vacillating. I was like, well, it could go on either one, but I wanted that to be on this one also.
Right.
And, but this record is, you know, really grooving and got a lot of different stuff going on. So it, you know, this is a bit of an anomaly on this record, but it's still wide. I mean, my listening and my writing are influenced and inspired by the stuff that I listen to.
Well, I do that when, you know, when you and I collaborated and you played on solo sessions. First of all, thank you for playing on. And I remember you were like, yo, I'm just going to do like, you know, three tracks. And like, you were one of the first players that I like listened to everything you did. I'm like, man, he gave me so much great stuff. I can't even use it all. Like, this is crazy. So I still have those tracks like in a Dropbox on an external hard drive. But, you know, like I remember my publicist was like, well, ask Jeff, if, you know, you can get a quote from him about the song. Or just working with you, and you made this amazing quote. It's actually on my band website. You were like, man, you know, Nikki and this song remind me of Counting Crows, August and Everything After. And man, that is one of my favorite albums of all time.
Mine too. Yeah.
When you said that, I was like, dude, first of all, what a huge compliment. But second of all, you're the first saxophonist I know that listened to Counting Crows, August and Everything After. There's no saxophone on that record. So it's just
a
testament to what you're listening to and what you're pulling from. It just was like, it like deepened my love for you. I was like, man, this guy listens to all the good stuff, you know, it doesn't matter. So let's play something else. What are we going to play next?
Is it the title track? Is that what we have?
Your choice.
Or we could play the very first one, Vinny the Crow. That's a really fun one.
We have, let me see what we have.
Can't remember what we downloaded.
Yeah. Oh,
Tip the Band. Yeah, let's do Tip the Band. That's got Robin Ford and Keith Carlock, and I can't remember who else, but I'll find out before the end of the tune.
Well, you really got to work on getting some really good musicians. Because
I know, right?
All right, here's Tip the
Band. I'll tell you who's on it. Here, hang on 1 second. I've got it up here.
All right.
So on Tip the Band, I got Robin Ford, Keith Carlock. Oh, Tony Hall on electric bass.
Awesome.
Out of New Orleans. And then the other two horn players, Emmanuel Etchem on trumpet and Ray Mason. On trombone,
I love the name because it just is everything musicians go through. So
Tip the Band.
Tip the Band. Here it is, Jeff Goffin. Holy shnikes. There's some sick pups on that track. And that was grooving. That was grooving so hard. The horns, the rhythm section, everybody just killing it.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's a fun record. There's a lot of that all over the record. A lot of flute on the record also. And it's just, there's a lot of pocket stuff, you know. And, you know, I was just sending stuff around to people, you know, not only here in town because I wanted to support my community during the lockdown, but I was sending stuff down in New Orleans also, and Rio and different places, you know, just getting different instrumentalists on certain things. And it was super fun, man.
And who's did you guys do it all individually, like remotely, and then somebody's mixing it all in one?
Yeah, there's a guy named Neil Capolino that mixed most of it here in Nashville.
Wow.
And another guy named Dan Rudin that had done a few tunes previous to that also. And
the mix is fantastic. The playing is fantastic.
Yeah.
The writing's fantastic.
Yeah.
Just
thank you.
All firing on all cylinders, man. Just,
I appreciate it. Thank you.
That's what made you happy. Like when you're doing your own project and you have these huge badasses playing on it, and then you listen back to it, you're like, yeah, that's good. That's as good as it gets right there. That is just.
Yeah. Well, no, I agree, man. I mean, it's, you know, to write music and to have people realize it at a higher level than you realized it at, you know, it's like, you just got to let the cats play.
Right.
And when you let them play, there's some magical shit that's going to happen. And so, you know, you hear it.
Did you wait to do your solos last? Did you do them first? Like, how did you kind of approach it?
It varied, you know, I mean, some of the stuff, you know, I would adjust certain things that I played sometimes, and sometimes I would leave it, you know, from the demo I had made. It really just varied, you know.
You're a music Jedi on all levels. We're running out of time. I just want to play a little bit of the last track. But Jeff, thank you so much. I've been wanting to do this interview with you for so many years. We've been good friends for so long, but it's just amazing to hear you playing live, seeing all your projects come to fruition.
No, thank you.
I still want to see this project live. So when you come to LA or we're in the same town, please let me know when this, and tell everybody where to download this and when it's going to be released.
Yeah. You can just go to jeffcoffin.com, and that's being released on the 26th of August. Which is coming up here. I think that's Friday. 23rd, 24th. Yeah, this Friday. And you can also pre-order it at the website too. And we're also offering you know, some bundles with some autograph stuff. And if people want to check that out, just go to jeffcoffin.com. Everything is there.
Ear Up Records, correct?
It's my record label. Yeah, Ear Up Records.
Very, very cool.
Ear Up Records. Yeah.
I love it. Jeff, you are a great cat. You're a great friend. Let's collaborate on music. And I want to hear more from you. We're going to play out with this last track. But once again, thank you, Jeff Coffin. On behalf of Sam, myself, thanks for tuning in. We'll see
thanks,
you guys
next week. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Jeff, you're a great cat, man. Keep doing what you do. We love what you do. And I'll see you in September and maybe beyond that. We'll have to
collaborate on
stuff. All right.
Thanks, Nikki. All right.
This last track. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you guys next week. Take care.
listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.